Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's Jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
And now, prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I'll say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow now, is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host A. Trunk.
Hey, folks, what's up? It's Eddie Trunk, and this is the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday, bringing you podcast interviews with some of your favorite artists in the world of rock and metal. And as I tell you each and every week, the interviews you are about to hear on this podcast, all of them originate on my SiriusXM radio show, Trunk Nation, which you can hear live Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Volume. That's SiriusXM Channel 106, or listen anytime on the SiriusXM app, whether you listen to it streaming live or on demand, however you want to do it. Everything is archived on the app, including interviews and more. Of course, the show replays every night, 10 to midnight Eastern, and I appreciate everybody tuning in around the U.S. and Canada. If you only listen to this podcast, you are only getting a tiny fraction of what I do on a daily basis live on the radio, so please be sure to come on and join us on Volume on 106. Also, a sixth radio show, which you can hear on Mondays, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Channel 39, Hair Nation. That is music and talk. So six live shows a week on SiriusXM. Be sure to join me there, again, if you are in the U.S. or Canada. After a few weeks, I like to bring you some of the interviews that I did live on the radio here on the podcast. We have two for you this week. Coming up a little bit later on will be my conversation with Les Claypool. Les is the bassist and the lead member of the band Primus. They are going out on tour once again, where they will play the Rush album, A Farewell to Kings, in its entirety. We talked to Les about that and his love of Rush coming up in a bit. But first, we start off with Corey Taylor. He, of course, from Slipknot and Stone Sour. Corey is, and of course, a solo career now, which Corey is working on a new record of covers as we speak. Corey chimed in to talk about a movie that he has a role in, and of course we touch on a bunch of music stuff as well. We'll talk to Corey Taylor first. We'll follow with Les Claypool. That's what we have for you on the Eddie Trunk Podcast this week. Be sure to follow me on social media at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, fan page on Facebook, eddietrunk.com, the website. Keep up with everything I have going on those outlets. And coming up a little bit later on, we have Les Claypool of Primus, but as promised, here is Corey Taylor. I've been a little while since I spoke to this guy. He's joining us now live on the phone. You know him best as the lead singer in Slipknot, but he's got a ton of other stuff he's always got going on as well. Joining us now live on Trunk Nation is Corey Taylor. CT, how are you, brother?
My man, how you doing, dude?
Good, man. You know, every time, you know, I got a place in Vegas now. You don't live far from me. And every time I see our mutual friends like Throne and these guys, I said, where the fuck is Corey? I said, what, does he put me on the pay no mind list? Is he just like scarce? Does he hide in the desert? Like, where is this guy? And they all say, no, Corey doesn't go out. When he's home, you don't see him. He doesn't go out. Are you Howard Hughes out there or what, man?
No. I go out once in a while, but dude, for me, like over the years, it's just gotten bad. You know, like I can't.
Wait. What do you mean it's gotten bad? What's gotten bad?
I can't go anywhere and relax, man. Like I'm constantly. You can ask the band. You can ask my wife. Like it's a constant battle of who's going to come up in the middle of dinner and ask for photos. Who's going to, you know, if I'm out with the kids, who's going to, I mean, dude, I was in a Target fully masked with my kids buying Halloween candy for God's sakes. And it was like, people tried to turn it into a meet and greet. So it's hard. It's hard for me, man. Like, it's just the last few years. But it's just something that, you know, I don't party anymore. So I don't really go out. There's not a lot of shit. There's, you know, the last few years, there haven't been any shows really, you know, I mean, there's more coming now.
Oh yeah.
I'll go to more shows and stuff, but for the most part, I just do dinner or I hang out at my house or I just jam with people here, you know? So if you want to come see, if you want to see me, I'm going to have you over for dinner. So that's what we're going to do.
Let's do it. But absolutely. I'm not going to reveal my spots, but I got spots that are super under the radar and super low key, to the point that I took Slash to one of them before the first night of GNR 5 years ago, and we had a great night out. So he could fly under the radar. I'll hit you up next time I'm there, but I miss you, man. I wanted to just catch up and see how you're doing. And I know you've got a movie you want to talk about, and there's a lot to cover here, but tell me about this movie, because I know you've always had an interest in horror movies. I know you've done some stuff like that in the past, and you got something coming here that I saw the trailer for called Rucker, which comes out this Friday. Tell us about this.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a low budget movie, with a ton of talent like attached to it. Aaron Drain, who I worked with on Fear Clinic many moons ago, hit me up because he was working on this movie in northern Washington State, like up in the Seattle area. And he just was like, you know, we've got this movie that we're working on. I had a blast with you in Fear Clinic. Would you like to be a part of it? And I was like, sure. You know, so me and the wife actually flew up there, and the wife hit it off with everybody so well that they ended up casting her in it as well, you know. And it's just a cool little tight kind of psychological thriller that is, it was a lot of fun to do. We had a blast doing it. And I play a trucker called Taco Tuesday, and it's as funny as it sounds. Like there's some really good humor to it, but there's also some great drama. There's some character study, and the gore is really good. So I think if people are into, you know, cool little small budget horror movies, they'll really, really dig it, you know, and it came out really well.
What the story, what I've been able to get from the trailer and the synopsis and all is that the story basically revolves around a truck driver, a deranged truck driver for the most part, right?
Yeah. He's a serial killer. And it's kind of based loosely on some real accounts, like the I-95 killer, the Lisk, the Long Island serial killer who kind of killed up and down. But they kind of tied him to more murders, like up and down the Eastern Seaboard. So, I mean, there's a basis in reality there, but it's a completely different, like, fictional story. And it deals with a trucker who's a part of a documentary. Turns out this trucker is a serial killer. And then the documentarian kind of gets caught up in his life in a really cool, unexpected way. Like, you have to watch. I don't want to give too much away because there's a nice twist there. But it's really, really cool. And, you know, like, I mean, I'm not in it a lot. So when I got to see it, I really kind of paid attention to the movie itself. And I was like, this is really, really good, man. So I think people will really, really dig it.
Now, are you not in it a lot because they cut you or because you didn't have a big part?
I'm no Shakespearean actor, but no, I only had a couple of scenes in it. I was like, my character doesn't play a big part in the story. The story is really revolves around Rucker, the truck driver, and the documentarian, and just that their whole interaction and their backstory. So I'm a bit part. You know, the one thing I'm jealous of is the wife got to get killed. Like, so they rigged her up with like the prosthetics and the fake blood pumps and stuff. And all I got was I got to break a pinata screaming. I was just like, what the hell, dude? You know, like this is kind of messed up. I wanted the blood pumping and stuff. So,
so you basically, for people who are fans of yours, and there's many that are looking for you in this film, is it like, don't blink, are you going to miss it?
No.
You have lines and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, I've got some scenes, some long scenes, actually. But, like, it's in the first half of the movie. The last half really is tied to those characters. It's really good. But it was, like I said, man, it was a lot of fun, you know? Like, it was, honestly, it was 2 days of work. And we were in and out. And it was, it was just good hanging out with people. You know, the cool thing is that they filmed it using all local people. And this was before the pandemic. So that, you know, this wasn't shut, like nothing was shut down. Like this was years ago, really. They used local people. They used local actors. They like all these people that, and really tied it to the community itself. So it was really cool to see them using the talent that they did instead of a lot of people farm it out and bring stuff in from out of town and whatnot. And they were actually able to give real good work to the people around the Seattle area.
Oh, you did it in the Seattle. I was going to ask you where you did it, around Seattle. That's where it was shot.
Yeah. It was like the upper Northwest, basically Pacific Northwest, up in that area. It was not too far from Seattle. We were about, I want to say we're like maybe an hour or so outside of town.
So you and your wife are in it. And for you, have you ever taken acting lessons? Like, how serious are you about wanting to act going forward? You like just doing fun stuff like this, or low budget, or do you have an aspiration to actually do bigger things and want to be an actor?
No, I honestly, the cool, honestly, like all of this stuff is extra. You know, like I'm just happy to come in and do some stuff. Like, I'm not, like, nobody's handing me an Oscar, you know, they're not going to cast me in a Broadway play or anything like that, you know, and that's fine. I like doing this stuff, and my aspirations lie more with writing movies and having them done, and not so much like trying to be an actor who leads a project. You know, if I got offered that, I'd be totally down with it. And I would, I would do my very best to try and be the best in it. But for me, the part that gets me excited is creating the scenarios and creating the world and creating the stories and stuff. And I'm actually about to shoot my first movie that I've actually gotten commissioned, Zombie versus Ninja. We're starting pre-pro in April, and we're going to shoot in June. So I'm really, really excited about that.
You're directing it?
No. Mike Mendez is directing it. He's done a ton of stuff, but people would know him from Tales of Halloween and Big Frickin' Spiders. He's really, really good, and he's a horror nerd like me. So he and I and Greg Grunberg, who people would know from a ton of stuff like Lost. He's in Star Wars, Star Trek, like all that stuff. We kind of combined forces, and we're going to get this made. It's going to be rad, dude. Like, we've got the financing. Looks like we're going to shoot, like I said, in June. We just need to start casting. We've got a handful of names who are going to be in it. But we need to get the main cast done. And because of my relationship, Tom Savini and his crew are going to do most of the special effects.
Oh, wow. That's huge. So yeah, you wrote it? Did you write this?
Yeah. Yeah. I wrote it. I wrote the main script, and conceived the story. And then I had a couple of script writers come in. Diego Cantu did a pass on it. And then when Mike got attached, he and I worked on a pass through that kind of expanded everything. So I'm stoked, man. Like, this is something that I've always wanted to do. Like, this is one of my bucket list things, really, is to see a movie project from soup to nuts, from start to finish, from ink on page to the step and repeat at the movie theater. You know, so I'm really proud and excited.
Have you, being predominantly in the rock business, have you talked to people in the rock world? Like another, the obvious guy that comes to mind is a guy like Rob Zombie. Have you talked to people who also have done things like this for advice or instruction at times out there on the road?
I haven't had a chance to really talk to Rob about it, but I talked to Clown about it because you know he.
Yeah,
you know,
I saw the film he did.
A couple of moments. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I forgot about that because that he did a film which he was in and I think did directed as well because I saw it like a couple years ago.
Yeah, Officer Down. Yeah. Like, yes. It's really good. It's pretty gonzo. It's out there. Like, people, if you're into it, like, people would love it. And that's an adaptation of a comic book, which is really cool. It's a graphic novel that I actually have. And when I heard that he was attached to it, I was like, oh, this is going to be dope. So, yeah. So, he kind of roped us all in because I'm in that too. I played Hard Case Harry, and it was a lot of fun watching him work and getting to work with like all the people that were involved. But I talked to him about it, man. And actually, me, him, and Roy Mayorga are going to score this movie, which is like a meeting of great minds. We're going to take it in a really heavy, like industrial kind of vibe, like really take it into like a rad realm of cool music landscapes and stuff.
Wait, it's Zombie versus Ninja? Is that what you said it was? Ninja versus Zombie?
That's it. Yep. ZVN. Zombie versus Ninja. Yeah.
Zombie. So you think that gets out this year or are you looking at next year?
I'm hoping maybe next year. It all depends. You know, I mean, the great thing is that, you know, when it's your first movie, you know, the one thing that you really want to do is just try and get that done, you know? And so there's no real time frame. Once we get it shot, I want to make sure that it's exactly what we want to put out. I want to make sure that it's exactly what the vision deserves. So I'm not going to rush to get it out. I want to make sure that it's done right. Hopefully either beginning of next year, or if it goes really well, you know, hopefully the end of this year. But like I said, I mean, unless it's done, I don't want to put it out. So we're going to make sure that it's done right. So hopefully next year.
Last thing on movies, and again, you can see Corey and his wife and the entire cast in a movie called Rucker, R-U-C-K-E-R. It is available tomorrow, video on demand, and the usual places where you get stuff, Blu-ray, DVD as well. Corey, what was the one movie that blew your mind as a kid that made you a horror fan? What's the one that still resonates with, what's the all-time favorite?
Halloween, 78, 100%, dude. I was, and that this was just based on the trailer alone. My mom took me to, do you remember the old Gil Gerard, Buck Rogers movie? You remember that? The disco in space movie, everybody's in satin and, like,
yes,
it
really, yes,
like,
yes.
It was cool,
yes.
You know.
Yes.
My mom took me to that because, you know, obviously I was a Star Wars kid. I was about five, you know, when this was going on. And, you know, so she took me to that to kind of, you know, get me to shut up or whatever. But the trailer before that movie was the trailer for Halloween. And you can look it up online. And to this day, I watch it. It gives me chills. I was so fascinated and mesmerized by that trailer that it was the only thing I wanted to see. And as soon as I was able to, I watched that movie, and to me, it was life changing. It was, that movie was as big a moment for me as Star Wars was, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And it's still to this day, one of my absolute 100% favorite movies of all time.
So on the music front, I know you just did some huge shows with Slipknot, the Knotfest Road show out there. I know there's another block of shows coming up, a month, and then it looks like a month off, and then a month on again. Put out a new song, Killer, the Chapeltown Rag. So give us the update on the music side. I know more live shows coming. What's the timetable for the actual record to come?
Record is actually in the process of being mixed right now. Like, everything's finished. So it's just being mixed right now, which is rad news. So it's probably going to take I think it's probably going to be another 3 months. Artwork's done. We just came up with a title. I'm not going to tell you it right now. But we're really stoked. So hopefully, 3 months from now, well, less than that, we'll get the single out, and then 3 months from now, we'll get the album out. And it's really killer, man. It's darker than We Are Not Your Kind, but there's a ton of melody. I've been telling everybody that it's like a heavier version of Volume 3. Like it's got so many textures and layers, and the heavy stuff has attack, but the melodic stuff really, you can just sink your teeth in. There's a lot of great melodies and hooks, and I'm really, really excited for people to hear it. As far as that goes, that's the Slipknot end. CMFT is putting out a B-sides album, which has all of the covers that we've done and some acoustic versions of some of the songs that are on CMFT. The first single will actually be February 11th, and people will be able to download that. And it's our cover of On the Dark Side by John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band, which is one of best rock tunes ever. It's one of our favorites to play live. We love digging into that. And then the CMFB sides will come out February 25th. It'll be available everywhere. We're really stoked on that too. So that's the music side. Plus, I've got some collabs coming up. The track I did with a band from LA called Horror will be coming out soon. It's looking like I'm going to do a video with them for that. And it's everything's coming up roses, Lydia. You know, it's going to be rad.
As far as playing live, you've got the Slipknot stuff that's announced. Do you want to spike in where you can, still doing shows with the solo band as well?
Little stuff here and there. Yeah. I mean, we just did Chip Rocked, which was a lot of fun. Like, that was kind of unexpected too, because we were effectively done, you know, and then a bunch of bands dropped off Chip Rocked, and they hit us up and they were like, do you want to do it? Cause I was going to go anyway, just because the Cherry Bombs were on it and you know, it's my wife's group. And I was like, all right, let me see if everybody's available. And we were able to put it together, and we went and we had a blast with everybody. I gained so much weight, dude. It was so brutal. Like, there's no reason to have 24-hour pizza. Okay, that's not right.
Yeah, there is. If you want to gain a ton of weight, it's like heaven. It's heaven, Corey.
Dude, it was insane, dude. It was brutal. So yeah, but we went out. We had a great time. It's looking like we're gonna do a handful of shows in the UK in October, threaded around the Slipknot schedule. So, you know, we're just kind of doing it here and there while we, you know, kind of gear up. I mean, like I told you last time, CMF2 is written, it's demoed, it's ready to go. Plus, we're constantly writing new stuff. So we're going to be in a great position next year, probably to go in and record CMF2 and just be ready to kind of do that. But that's obviously after, you know, Slipknot has kind of done its thing.
You know, real quick, it's funny when you talk about playing on that cruise recently, because last time I was in Vegas, three, 4 weeks ago, I went and I got coffee with Tyson Leslie. Do you know Tyson?
I know Tyson.
So Tyson was there because he was doing some stuff with Jason Hook. And he said, I'm here doing stuff with Hook for this Shiprock cruise. And he goes, we're going to do this jam thing. And he said, let's get together and get a coffee. So I went and met him. We had a coffee. We were talking. And then I said, so who else is on that? Who's doing this jam? And he said, he's running down list. He goes, and Corey's coming on the ship. He goes, but Corey's not going to play. He's just going because his wife is on, and he's just going to, you know, be hanging out and whatever. I was like, I know Corey. There ain't no way you're going to have live music and people playing old Van Halen and all this stuff. And Corey is not going to get up there. And then sure enough, the cruise happens and there's a million video clips. See Corey Taylor performing with. So I was like, I knew they'd pull you in. Whether it was the pizza or the music, they were pulling you in.
Right. Right. And I mean, I had Hook hitting me up for days going, you know, which ones do you want to do? And I was like, dude, I'm just there to hang, because you know, but that was before CMFT got added. So after that, I was like, well, I can't get out of now. I better,
right.
But I ended up only just getting up with Steel Panther, and we ended up doing our that version of Rainbow in the Dark that I did for the Ronnie James
Dio. This is your life. So that amazing
was,
version.
That was cool. Yeah. And that, you know, that was the first time me and Tooch had gotten to do it with Satch. So that that was a lot of fun to be able to do that. You know, it was really, really cool.
You know, I'm in LA right now. And I went last night to a jam at the Whiskey where they did all Van Halen. And one of the singers that got up and did the VH stuff was Ralph, a.k.a. Michael Starr from Steel Panther. And I have maintained and said, of course, sadly we lost Eddie since. But when Van Halen was kind of in that limbo spot and trying to figure out, are we going to continue with Roth? Is Sammy coming back? Do we get somebody else? I've said repeatedly, that's the guy. Like he is like, I've never seen anybody do a better David Lee Roth in the presentation, vocally, visually. It's like, that's the guy. So I was like, Van Halen should act like you saw Journey go get a guy that was basically could sing and act, not act so much, but be, you know, Steve Perry. I mean, he's the guy. He would have been perfect for it. It's crazy how much he is David Lee Roth.
Right. No, absolutely. And I mean, and Ralph is just one of the best singers around anyway, you know. So, you know, the crazy thing is when I first met him and Russ, they were doing
Van Halen tribute, right?
Yeah, they were doing
Atomic Punks?
That's it. They were doing Atomic Punks, you know. And this was well before Metal Shop, actually. So me and Jim met them at the Des Moines airport shortly after one of the first reunited shows of Stone Sour at the Laser Fest, which is Laser 103.3 in Des Moines. They put on a big radio show. Stone Sour was on it, and so were the Atomic Punks. But then me and Jim had to turn right around and jump on a plane to fly to Europe to meet up with Slipknot because we were finishing up the Iowa tour. So it was this weird kind of culmination of running into them. We had never met them before, but they were so cool. And then years later, finding out, I was like, oh, those are the dudes in Metal Shop. It was like, it was rad. You know, it was really cool. So I go way, way back with those dudes. 20 years I go back with them, man. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, listen, man, it's great. It's great catching up with you. I know you got a lot going on. One of these days, I hope to see you, and I'll hit you up. I'm going to be in Vegas at the end of February. I don't know if you, Metallica, I'm sure you know, is playing the stadium there, so I'm going to definitely come in and hit that. I don't know if you're getting out or whatever, but I'll hit you up when I'm in town, and we'll see what we can do. I'm doing my show from there too when I'm in town too, so we can maybe it'd be great to have you come in and just shoot the shit for a full show if you happen to be home and. We'll try to hook that up.
Yeah, man. Yeah, absolutely. It all depends on what's going on. My Alicia is actually going to be on tour. Can I plug her real quick?
Of course. Yeah.
The Cherry Bombs are doing a headline tour with Them Evils starting February 25th and lasting to March 4th. It's a short little head running. Like kind of like a warm-up tour that they got going into the rest of the year because they got a bunch of stuff coming up. But they're going to be playing Albuquerque, Dallas, Houston, San Antonio. I think that's it. But I just want to make sure that, you know, tickets are online. You can go to the Cherry Bombs websites or links are in the socials. Go and check it out. You can get tickets there. It's going to be rad. They're doing Macabre in full. Or as much as they can, with, you know, I mean, sometimes their show is so big that there's not a venue that can hold it, man. It's ridiculous. But if you want a kick ass rock and roll, heavy metal show with fire, with dancing, with hot chicks, with, grinders, with, aerial, with all kinds of crazy stuff going on. Go see the Cherry Bombs. And you can, like I said, you can find the schedule online. Go to any of their socials and check it out. It's a rad show.
And real quickly, while we're running down the music stuff, we talked about CMFT. We talked about Slipknot, of course. Is Stone Sour still back burner? Is there any desire for you to revisit that? Or is that pretty much on the back burner for now?
No, it's on the back burner. Yeah. It's, you know, just, it's just one of those things where my mind and my heart are in a different direction, you know? And that's cool. You know, like I wish everybody in Stone Sour all the best. I still talk to almost all of them, and, but it's just, you know, sometimes you just got to do what's best for your heart. And this is, that's what I'm doing. So Stone Sour is on the back burner. And I'm doing, you know, I'm doing, but I'm also doing a ton of music. So, and like I've shown in the solo show, if you want to hear that stuff, that's a great place to hear it. Cause I do a ton of Stone Sour, do a ton of Slipknot, and I do a ton of covers, do a ton of the originals, for the solo stuff. It's a great show.
Well, I'm excited for the Slipknot record, man, because you know me, I love my melody injected into heaviness, and it sounds like, and right. I love Chapel Town, and I love some of the recent stuff a lot, so I'm real excited for the record, and obviously the CMFT stuff is killer, and everybody check out Corey, again, in the film Rucker, R-U-C-K-E-R, along with his wife Alicia and a bunch of other cast members as well, hitting on Friday, February 3rd, VOD, Blu-ray, DVD, and you can see Corey Taylor playing, what was it again, Taco Tuesday?
Taco Tuesday, baby, that's right.
All right, I look forward. Are you in some sort of outfit or disguise, or will everybody know it's immediately you? Are you, are you dressed?
No, it's my long hair, it's my head. Yeah, you can't miss it.
All right. Sounds good. Listen, man, be well, and I'll hit you up and hopefully see you soon, okay?
All right. Sounds good, brother.
Thanks to Corey Taylor for joining us. Next up, it's Les Claypool from Primus.
Myrtle Beach is the beach. 60 miles of bright sand, water, and a wealth of wonderful music playing day and night. You can step into a simple beach bar and discover a surprising level of exciting musical talent. A place to kick back and groove to the enticing soundtrack of the most unexpected vacations around. With nothing but good vibes floating through the warm ocean air. Plan your own music-filled trip to America's jukebox at visitmyrtlebeach.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Eddie Trunk. It was great to have Les Claypool on Trunk Nation a few weeks ago. I never interviewed Les before, and he obviously is a huge Rush fan, which so many of us are as well. And Les and Primus are getting ready to go out and play A Farewell to Kings in its entirety. It's the second run of dates that they are doing this. Les checked in with me on Trunk Nation on Sirius XM to talk about why he's doing it and if they continue to they plan to continue to do it, and some Primus stuff in general. So here we go with Les Claypool on the second interview on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast.
Looking forward to speaking to this guy. I don't know if we've ever had the pleasure of speaking, but been a fan, and I'm really excited about what he is doing with his band Primus, which is paying tribute to one of my all-time favorite bands, Rush. Joining us right now is Les Claypool. Les, pleasure to see you and talk to you. How are you?
Ahoy there. I'm good.
So we're talking about a tour here, a tribute to Kings, going out doing another run of playing the Rush album, A Farewell to Kings, in its entirety. Tell me about the experience of doing it the first time around, because obviously it was positive that you're doing it again.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty spectacular as far as an undertaking and as far as just an enjoyment level for us as musicians to play it. I actually look forward to every night, you know, blowing through the Primus stuff and getting to the Rush out. It was so much fun to play. Plus I got to wear silk robes.
Oh, did you rock the whole look as well?
It was kind of fake silk. It was a satiny, but yeah, I had to rock the robes. That was part of the deal, you know?
So do you start with Primus stuff and end with Rush or vice versa?
It's kind of a sandwich. It's the Rush sandwich with Primus bread. We do some Primus, take a little break, put the robe on, And then we come out and do the epic Farewell to Kings record.
And then you come out at the end to do a few more Primus songs. Is that the sandwich?
Yes. It usually ends with a 20 some odd minute version of Southbound Pachyderm.
so you go in and you basically become like a Rush Superman, if you will, because you go in and you change into the robes, and then you've channeled 1977, and there you go. Let's go do Farewell to Kings.
You know, I like that Rush Superman metaphor. I'm the only one that puts the robe on. I don't know what the hell is going on with these other guys, but I bought four robes, and I'm the only one that's sported them so far.
Talk about how the idea to first do this, and again, Primus has another run of doing a tribute to Kings, a pretty lengthy one, too. It starts April 15th, Oklahoma City, ending June 25th in Vegas. Just go to the Primus website to see all the dates. But Les, who in the band first had the idea to do this?
Well, it was always a joke throughout the years, you know, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? What are we going to do next? Oh, we should go out and do Hemispheres in its entirety. We should do Hemispheres in its entirety. Ha, 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 ha. And then one day we said, maybe we should go do Hemispheres in its entirety. And then we realized, well, first of all, you can't do Cygnus Part 2 before you do Cygnus Part 1. Sure. But just the notion of doing a Rush album in its entirety. And 2112 seemed a little too obvious. And Cygnus was always my favorite. When I was a kid, I saw Hemispheres live and the tour. And when they played Cygnus, they had the Rocinante on the big screen flying through the black hole. And it warped my little 14-year-old mind. And so I've always had a soft spot for that song. So the notion of playing that record because that song's on it was a very strong motivating force.
When you first thought of this idea to do this, I'm assuming, because obviously it's very challenging music to play, and you guys are, in your own right, great musicians, I get that, but how did the other guys respond when you said, hey, let's go do all of a Farewell to Kings in the middle of a Primus set? Was everybody down with it, or did somebody have to be sold a little bit?
No, it was yes, because the thing is even when we all first got together in 1988, because I'd had Primus prior to that, with different guys, and then they left. So Lur was an old buddy of mine, and then Herb was just somebody we auditioned. But one of the things that we could connect on, because Lur had this metal background, but he was a Zappa head and a Jerry Garcia head, and Herb was into all this world music, and obviously it was obvious with the size of his drum kit that he must have listened to some Neil Peart. And me, I had all this eclectic, weird, and funk background. So we could connect on Rush. We just started playing Rush riffs, nothing in its entirety, because I don't think I ever knew any Rush songs in their entirety until this thing. But it's always been a bonding thing for us. And obviously touring with those guys and them becoming good friends of ours and whatnot. So it just seemed like a very natural thing to do. It was a big undertaking. It's like saying, hey, let's climb Everest. You know, we've climbed Lassen, we've climbed, you know, a couple of hills around Concord. Let's try Everest, you know, so what the hell? And it was a lot of work. We've never rehearsed so much in our lives as Primus than we did doing Farewell to Kings.
Would you be doing this if Rush were still active and Neil hadn't passed away? Or was this actually brought on a little bit by the fact that we don't have Rush anymore?
Well, this actually, the idea for this came about when Neil was still on the planet at that time. You know, we were supposed to do it a while ago, and then we took the Slayer tour, and so we postponed it, and then COVID took a chunk out of everybody's, you know, calendar, and it got postponed again. So actually, when we were originally talking about it, it was mainly just for us to do, and also, yes, a tribute to our buddies, but Neil was still around at that time when we were first talking about it.
Can you talk a little bit about you and the band's relationship with Rush over the years? You mentioned, of course, that you toured with them. Can you talk about that experience and how that blossomed into a friendship and a connection with the guys?
Well, it was pretty surreal for young musicians. This was in the early 90s. And somebody at the record company said, hey, I know the Rush guys. I want to open for Rush. And it was just Roll the Bones tour. And we're like, duh. So it was like an immediate friendship that was sparked. It was surreal because those were our superheroes when we were, when I was 14, they were my heroes. So to be a man in his mid 20s and all of a sudden just hanging out, broing down, jamming in the locker rooms on a daily basis with those guys, was pretty surreal. So, but then it just became, well, they're our friends, you know, after you get past the surreal element and they're your bros, you know? So.
Well, and they're easy. I'm fortunate to know those guys very well over the decades and have done a lot with them. And that's the thing about it, even from my perspective, not being a musician, doing what I do. I remember, as a kid interviewing them for the first time, maybe 30 years ago, it's like, holy shit. And then since then, of course, you know, I'm in touch with the guys. I know them. And they're just the thing about Rush and them as people is they're such extraordinarily nice, unassuming people that you can very quickly go from that, holy shit, there's Getty, there's Alex, to, hey, bud, how are you? You know, and they're always going to be those guys. But as a credit to them as human beings, they are just such regular, chill people that you can get comfortable around them very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm a very fortunate human. You know, I tell my kids this all the time. If you get to do what you enjoy for a living, you've won the game. Whether you're making $500 a night or $500,000 a night, you know.
Sure.
It's just the fact that you get to get up every day and go, I get to go do what I enjoy for a living. And it kind of tarnishes it a little bit, but it's still fucking awesome. So, and because of that, I've got to meet a lot of my heroes over the years. And for the most part, they've all been really wonderful, wonderful people. They've become good friends. I'm in a band with Stuart Copeland. What the hell's going on there? You know, and he's one of my best friends. So for me, when I look at my resume, I'm very, very proud of the people I've got to work with and meet, and more than anything, befriend, you know? So, and it's glorious when you meet your heroes, and it's extra glorious when you find out they're actually just wonderful people, you know? So, and those guys are wonderful people.
Needless to say, Getty as a bass player, an influence on you, and can you talk a little bit about the impact he had as a player? Because if I'm not mistaken, I had Getty on my show twice, actually, for his big, beautiful book of bass that he did, which is just this, I'm sure you have it, this incredible, expansive book. And you're in it, right? So obviously there's that connection. But you mentioned as a kid, seeing Rush, it blew your mind. Was that an inspiration to play bass, or were you already playing bass at that point?
I think I had been playing bass for 2 months when I saw the Hemispheres show. And I bought scalp tickets and drank 3 warm Löwenbräus, threw up in the parking lot, and I was 14. And it was the greatest night of my life at that point. So it was amazing to stand there in front of the stage and see Getty's bass as they were setting up all their equipment and just drooling over it. Cause that was what I wanted more than anything was a Rickenbacker, but I just didn't have any money. But, so he was a huge part. It was, you know, I had a crappy record collection. We just didn't have any money. But I had friends that had these huge record collections. This one buddy of mine had all these album covers all over the wall and the ceiling. And it was amazing. We'd go and hang out at his house and smoke weed and just sit around and listen to all his records. And so I'm sitting there, Getty Lee, oh, Getty Lee's the best. Oh, Getty Lee's the greatest thing in the world. Oh my God, Jesus Christ, Getty Lee. And he was older and he's like, you know, I like Getty. Getty's amazing, but you got to listen to this guy. And he played me some Larry Graham and then he played me some Stanley Clark. And so in the beginning, Getty, my whole world was about Getty until I discovered some of these other guys. And then I blossomed into this amalgamation of that I am now. But definitely Getty, like when Getty came to my house to interview me for that book. And I said, okay, I'll do the interview, but the deal is you have to show me the proper way to play YYZ. And he did. And I've been playing it wrong all these years. So, and you'd sit with Getty and just the way he phrases things and the way he fingers things, you're just like, oh my God, it's Getty Lee. Nobody does it like that. He just, like I was playing the right notes, but I was playing them totally different than the way he does it. So that's what makes him Getty Lee. It's like, yeah. what makes freaking Hendrix sound like Hendrix. It's the way he approaches his instrument. You know, it's not necessarily buttons he pushes and things he stomps on. So Geddy Lee is Geddy Lee.
You mentioned hemispheres a couple times.
He's an adjective for himself.
You mentioned hemispheres a couple times, which of course is the record after A Farewell to Kings, and to many hardcore Rush fans, like the definitive prog masterpiece Rush record in their catalog. I don't know if you feel that way, but I know many do. And I know for the band it was very challenging to make, and it stands as that record for the hardcore fans that's kind of always pointed to. So the logical question, Les, would be you're doing a whole nother run doing A Farewell to Kings. In the forward thinking role of the next time around, would you like to go out and tackle Hemispheres and maybe do that at some future tour?
I mean, we always joke about doing that. Yes, you know, you got to finish Cygnus, you got to play the whole Cygnus saga. But I mean, do we want to become the Rush cover band? I mean, not really. We want, you know, you got to be careful and not be, you know, that's the one thing is we don't want. This is a thing that's fun for us, and it's a tribute to our bros, and we don't want to just feel like or have people perceive us as like, hey, Neil has left the planet, the band doesn't play anymore, these guys are milking the cow, you know what I mean? So we got to be a little careful with it, but we might learn it and play it on our own. It's just around the practice room. I don't know, but there's no plans to do it. I agree with you when people say, what's your favorite Rush record? And I'm not big on favorites, but it's Hemispheres, because like most music for everybody, it represents a time in your life. It's the soundtrack. It was a soundtrack to my 14-year-old life, you know? So
what has Geddy and Alex said about you doing this? Have you gotten feedback from them? Have they seen clips online? Have they been to a show? What has been their response about you going out and doing this, if any?
Well, we just, like I said, we just did we just did an interview, one of these Zoom things. Lur and I and Alex did one yesterday for a guitar magazine, and Alex hasn't seen it. He hasn't seen any of the YouTubes or anything. I don't know if Geddy has, but I text back and forth with Geddy every now and again. And I asked him before we did this a couple of years ago, hey, are you cool with us doing this? And he said, oh, certainly, of course, yes. And so we got their blessings to do it. But we're going to be playing Massey Hall this spring. So I would assume they will be there. I don't know, but I would assume they'll come down.
Well, when I looked at the Primus website to see all the dates.
Didn't say that on the air.
well, look, it doesn't, Les, it doesn't take a genius to figure that out. You know, anybody who's a Rush fan knows they're from Toronto, and that's a legendary venue, and All the World's a Stage was recorded there and what have you. But when I looked at the dates on the Primus site, I was looking to see, hey, where can I catch one of these shows? And I'm looking at, well, and that one jumps out like, ta-da, you know, Toronto, Massey Hall. It looks like it's May 14th. That one's just like, it's not, but it almost looks like it should be pulsing and illuminated around all the other dates just because that's the holy ground right there. So one would think that maybe if it's ever going to happen, that would be the spot.
Yeah, I mean, who knows?
It's almost like, I know when this next run of dates got announced, there was almost like a thing because they're going to Canada on this run. You're crossing the border into the hallowed ground of Rush. So there was already excitement that you were just even taking this to Canada. And then obviously the Toronto stop jumps out hugely because there are other stops throughout Canada too, we should mention.
Well, wait till we do the Stomp and Tom Connors tribute album, because then the Canadians will really be fired up. I mean, we'd always planned on doing all this. It all fell apart when the world turned upside down. So we're just playing catch up at this point. You know, we had to cancel five shows on this last run, you know, two because of hurricanes and three because I got COVID. So, you know, these are odd times.
Yeah, no doubt. A couple more things, and I'll let you go. I wanted to ask you, for you personally, you mentioned, of course, Cygnus, but is there another track on A Farewell to Kings when you do this that for you personally stands out that you love playing? I mean, if you look at this record, there's really only one quote-unquote hit on the record that everybody knows. That would be Closer to the Heart. The rest, you have to be a Rush fan to know these songs, which clearly you are. I am. Many in your audience probably are. But is there another highlight? Is there another highlight song?
How can you go through life not knowing Xanadu? You know, it's like, oh my God.
There's plenty that don't. In your audience, I'm sure they do, but in the big scheme of things, you don't hear Xanadu on the radio ever.
I know, I'm joking more than anything, but that's what makes Rush fans Rush fans. You know, it's like we were the guys that it was like being a Trekkie or something in high school, you know. It's like very few people got it, but the ones that got it were like, you know, bonded by Bytor. you know what I mean? Like,
so what's the reaction from the Primus fans in the audience? They're all in on this. I mean, when you do Cinderella Man, they're all in on it. They know it. They're like, yeah, this is cool. Or is there some, do you sense there's a part of the Primus base that when they come, they're like, yeah, let's get to the Primus songs? Or is everybody down with this in the audience?
You know, it's like anything else. You know, you can please all the people some of the time and some of the people all the time, or what, you know, whatever Lincoln said. So some people are there to see the Primus, but there's some people that are there just to see the Rush thing. And but for the most part, it's this, you know, amalgamation of folks, if that's the proper word to be using. But I think most people would be bummed if we only did the Rush record, because they're Primus fans, you know. So
sure.
It's, and like Farewell I said, it's the Rush sandwich. We're the bread.
And Farewell to Kings, at least in its studio version, is roughly 35, 38 minutes long. It's not exceedingly long. Six songs, even though there's a couple long ones on there. So it does leave a ton of time for you to do Primus in front of and behind it, unless you jam stuff out. I don't know. Do you extend it beyond its natural running time a lot?
No, we do what it's, we do. That was the glory of, look, I love going and seeing bands that would jam it out. You know, I love it. Play it different every time. I love it. But that was the thing about Rush that you go to the show, every fill, everything was in its place. It was a scripted, orchestrated piece of music every time. It was amazing. So, you know, it's like anything else. One night you want sushi, the next night you want some burgers. You know, and if you want to see some precise, amazing playing, you would go see Rush.
Everybody check out Primus, another run of a tribute to Kings, which we're talking to Les Claypool about right now. Again, the next run of dates is quite long. Kicks off April 15th, Oklahoma City, and it runs through June 25th, ending in Las Vegas. You can see all the dates online. Les, before I let you go, above and beyond these shows, anything you can share with the Primus fans in the audience about your band and new music, anything else you want to share that's coming up?
I mean, actually, this new, I've been posting, you know, and I'm an Instagrammer guy now, which is a bizarre thing. I got this new rehearsal space, and we did the whole Rush thing there. Now we're recording stuff there. So we just recorded a few songs. So we're hoping we're going to release these things before the next tour. So there'll be a few new Prime songs for people to chew on. And one of them is 13 minutes long. So there you go.
For real? Is it really?
Oh yeah.
So would these just be single releases, or is it a goal towards a full record at some point?
You know, you just mentioned Farewell to Kings was 36 minutes long, you know, and that's the way it should be. You know, when we got into the 80s and CDs and people started making these records that are 20 songs long, it's like, it's too much, you know? And we're at the point, I mean, it's wonderful when you're a young band and you're building your bass and people are, you know, but when you're guys like us, people want to hear a couple new songs. They don't want to hear us going out and playing, and they want to hear the old tunes. They want to hear, you know, that's what they want to see. We have so much of our catalog that people are still going, how come you don't play this? Why don't you play that? So we figured, let's feed in just a few So, and the way the world is now with the Spotify's and people, the way people acquire music, how many people are actually wanting these long form records or recordings anymore? So I don't know. We're just, we thought it would be, it was more fun for us to just focus on getting together and writing and really polishing and perfecting a few songs than it was trying to come up with a whole album full of stuff.
Well, I as a music fan, I would think a lot of Primus fans would like your fan base, I would think would be all in if you gave them a lengthy, fully conceived album. But then again, you can still make new music and still deliver a record that's 35, 40 minutes long. I mean, a lot of bands still do it, but yes, I agree with you. Some of this stuff, even today, two records of, you know, an hour each, it's a lot, especially with the attention span, which is pretty limited from a lot of people these days. So I see both sides of it, but as an old school guy myself, there's nothing better to me than me, you know, getting an actual physical package with every track and a fully conceived sequenced record. I mean, that journey from last track to first track to last track is something I still love.
I hear you. But we didn't have it in us.
But it could come at some point. You're not ruling out ever doing a record again, right?
No. But we could accumulate into something. But at this slice of time that we had to do something before the next tour, I just wanted to do one song. I wanted to do one long epic song, which we did. And then we thought, well, shit, we're going to put this on vinyl. We got to have something on the other side. So we did two other songs. So the idea at this point, whether it happens or not, is I want to do a 10 inch and I want, cause they sound better. The more, you know, all that, right.
The bands are further apart. Yeah.
Yes. Correct. So we want to do a 10 inch and release the big track and then have the other two tracks on the other side. So that's the notion at this point.
And as far as playing live, you referenced this a second ago, opening for Slayer. I mean, Primus is a band that can really adapt to any situation, proven by the fact that you can go from opening for Rush to playing with a band like Slayer, which back in the day, having seen those guys almost since the beginning, I mean, it was a thing where nobody got over opening for Slayer. You were just, even if you were a great band, it was a thing to get that band off the stage and people just chanting Slayer, Slayer. That's dissipated some in the last 15, 20 years of them touring. It's gotten a little more reasonable, but it was a spot a lot of people didn't want for a very long time. How did Primus do on a Slayer tour?
I mean, it went great. I mean, I would get them chanting Slayer, actually. I would say Slayers coming, Slayers coming during a Tweakers, but it was a lot of fun. I mean, that's the thing, is it was the same way with Rush. I mean, I saw Rush, I don't know how many times, and it was hard to be the opening band for Rush. But it, for us, it worked out very well. But it's also with Primus. It's like being the opening, taking the opening spot with Primus can be tough sometimes too. So we tend to pick people that we personally are into. So we feel like maybe we're turning people on to something interesting. The Slayer thing was a lot of fun. I mean, we got to, I think my favorite thing about it was getting to know and hang out with Al from Ministry. I'd met him over the years, but to really just kind of hang with him, we had a good time. So.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, well, listen, it's great to talk to you. I appreciate a few minutes here today. And again, everybody check out Primus, a tribute to Kings tour, Farewell to Kings by Rush in its entirety with Primus tunes before and after it. And again, the dates are all online. Les, thank you so much. I hope to catch one of these shows. I'm really looking forward to seeing it eventually. And all the best to you. Keep us posted on what you have going on.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks to Les Claypool. Be sure to check out video, I believe we have of that, up on the SiriusXM app. Take a look and see. A bunch of cool video, including the Slash performances up there and a bunch of stuff. Nikki Sixx special. All that is on the archives of the streaming on the app. Just go to the SiriusXM app and you can hear past shows, interviews, full shows, audio, video. It's all there. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. New episodes every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe. Get it free wherever you get your podcasts. Be back next Thursday for another all-new episode. Thanks to Joel Pollack for producing, and I'll see you guys then.